Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
It's all here.
A no-hitter. Grand slam.
Have all the fun you want.
Every moment. Every game.
Make sure you guys tune in.
Catch the White Sox only on NBC Sports Chicago.
This is the Bulls Talk Podcast presented by Coors Light. I'm Jason Goff. I'm joined by my teammates, Casey Johnson, Rob Schaefer, and our digital content producer and just man about town, Tony Gill. Coming up on the show, we'll discuss the NBA playoffs since the last pod that we recorded. Derrick Rose, Ja Morant, Mike Conley. Bulls fans should keep an eye on that Jazz series. And we'll discuss the Bulls roster going into free agency. KC penned a piece about who should stay, who should go, who might stay, who might go. And we'll talk about 10 years ago around this time when the Bulls were eliminated in the Eastern Conference Finals by the Miami Heat.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
If Ja Morant is a Bull, like that, I mean...
But why can't they ever get lucky like a Luka Doncic lottery or a Ja Morant lottery?
They could have had Michael Porter. Yeah, man, it's...
You need to play like that. You need a Ja Morant or Luka Doncic, you know?
Or Trae Young. Like, they interviewed him, right? They were interested. They just couldn't grab him.
No, they were too low in that draft. That was the Wendell draft, wasn't it?
Yeah. All right, Ryan Pace, and I know, like, it's different in the NFL. Ryan Pace, like, if he has a guy in mind, he's like, all right, I'm doing whatever it takes to get that guy. It's like, the Bulls don't have that kind of thing. Like, honestly, if it came down to it for Luka or Ja or – all right, not Trey, but maybe just Luka and Ja. I might have been like, hey, do you want Zach LaVine? And I know that pushes the timeline back. But if you have the opportunity to take a truly franchise, like unquestioned franchise player, I think you take that risk.
Yeah, it sometimes it's harder to trade for those top-end guys in the NBA than it is in the NFL, though, because NFL draft picks are such gold, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, it would take – I mean, I guess you could get it done with a good player and a future first-round pick, but mm-hmm. – I mean that's what Dallas did to get Doncic, you know?
Yeah. Like if and that's what like a lot of teams, Miami, Boston, you know, the Bulls, like I get it that if I stay pat, I will still have a good team. But the teams that take the big swings, and some people miss, you know, but people that continually take the big swings, it seems like they're rewarded more often than not.
Well, this new regime is taking a big swing. You know, that was the old regime we're talking about, you know? So we'll see what else they got.
Anybody else keeping a close eye on this Clippers thing, though?
Because Kawhi's coming to the Bulls? When they lose?
Look, I'm trying to find, all right, what completes this big three thing that will make sense.
Patrick Williams becoming Kawhi quickly.
Yeah, Tony, I'm sure Kawhi Leonard is looking at this Bulls situation and thinking, that's exactly what I'll move away from home for. That's the one right there. They're really doing great stuff. That's what I'm going to leave LA. I don't think I don't necessarily, not that I know, I obviously don't know Kawhi or anything, but if he leaves LA, like, I don't know, it's such a pipe.
He better get out that conference because that young boy will keep busting his ass for the next 10 years. Yo, you better go find a soft landing, Rob. Yeah, dude, that is my favorite shit to watch. This playoffs have been crazy, but that is my favorite to watch because them boys talked all that trash, commercials and everything else, and Pat Beverly and Lou Williams celebrating when they found out at the casino, and they ain't done nothing that Lob City didn't do, which is disappoint Clippers fans. So cool with me. Luka Doncic is going to be what?
You know what's funny is, like, everybody wants the LeBron stuff until you have to do the LeBron stuff. And, like, that's just happened to Kawhi. It's like, yeah, oh, I want – just give me the playoffs. Just leave me alone throughout the whole season. I don't need teammates. Just get into the playoffs. We'll be fine. But, no, like, LeBron is a whole thing. There's a lot that comes with being LeBron, and these dudes are finding out that they can't do it.
Hey, they're finding out that their wide receivers are not quarterbacks. That's what they're finding out. Kawhi Leonard ain't bringing up the ball. Kawhi Leonard, you know what I mean? Like, it's a lot of dependency in that game. That man had 31 in the first half. In the second half, Rick Carlisle was like, okay, this stuff can't happen anymore, and this is how we're going to defend it. And if you're not bringing up the ball, you can't dictate what the defense is going to do. And he is a mid-range to sometimes, you know, long-range shooter who gets the ball in his spots. And if you don't give it to him in his spots, it's going to take a couple of dribbles to get there. He's not as athletic and not as fast because of that knee and that hip. Dude, Luka Doncic is not only wearing these dudes out because of how they'd have to defend him, he is talking cash shit. And that is my favorite part about it. Like, whatever language he is saying it to him in, it looks the same as if, like, there's nothing better than when somebody run up on your block and you see, like, the best ball players on the block get handled by somebody else. You're like, oh, man, these guys ain't so tough after all. The league, I think, is looking at these dudes like, hey, man, all that talk and all that bluster, like, you had to worry about Paul George last year. Now you got to worry about something else this year. Man, it might not be Doc Rivers. It might not be Tyronn Lue, but, yeah, that dude has got something out for them guys. They should have never talked shit to him in that bubble. They should have just left him alone. I'm telling you, brothers got to stop treating white guys who make it to this level like they not the shit. Like, for real. Them days are over of one or two white guys being able to kick your ass, or, you know, the days where we called Jason Williams white chocolate and all that other bullshit. Hey, listen, if he can play ball, it goes back to forever ago. You know? You think dudes is talking shit to Bill Walton? You know what I'm saying? When he was Bill Walton? Like, you got to knock that off, man. Montrezl Harrell woke his ass up. And then he went to the Lakers. So this man has been waiting to see you again. Who thinks they're gonna get swept?
The Clippers?
No.
You don't think they're gonna get swept?
No.
I don't know, man. When I hear Ty Lue though saying, "Well, you know, now they got to go do it at home." It's like, what? What? This isn't like you're the road team, the lower seed that dropped two games on the road, and you can say, well, this is what they're supposed to do. Like, no, nah. And they're going to be – I don't know what their capacity is in Dallas, but it has to be significantly more than in Los Angeles. So that's going to be a crazy, away court environment. I don't know, man. I still – and I was so high on the Clippers last year, and I got totally duped. And I picked them to – win this series in, but I still can't imagine they're not going to take a game. I just can't imagine it. I don't know.
Yeah. And then you got D Rose, you know, playing like D Rose can play at this ripe old age. Yeah, Kenny Smith asking him about, like, what's harder and easier with the lack of athleticism now. And he gives a perfect answer. It's just, it's cool to see, even though it's happening somewhere else. It's cool to see that he seems like he's in a better place physically and personally and emotionally. And he still got it out for little point guards, man. Like when Derek, you know, Casey, when Derek was Derek, you know, Steph and Jeff Teague and Brandon Jennings and dudes like that, they used to get that work. So it's fun to see him on the floor with like a young dude who watched him in those years and go up against him. You know, Trae Young is a ball of fun, but that was cool to watch Derek and the boys do it all over again at Bulls East.
He's the best player on the team right now. I mean, Randall struggled these first two games. I know he had a good second half in game two, and I assume, you know, Randall seems like a pretty tough-minded guy. I assume he's going to come back, but Derek's been the best player on the team. No question through the first two games for the Knicks. And, you know, you can see, obviously, Tom, the trust he has in him. He played 39 minutes. And I'm not being a minutes police guy here. I'm just saying that he's obviously playing his best players a lot of minutes in the playoffs. So, you know, Derek is, yeah, it's you know, I've always said if he's healthy, he's still a great player. Every time he's been healthy, he's played at a high level, and he's doing it on a big stage right now. So that's a great series. Rob and I, one of our few disagreements. I've got the Knicks. He's got the Hawks. I place a lot of trust in Tom Thibodeau. Not that Nate McMillan's a bad coach, because he's a fantastic coach, but I just think Tom is really good at playoff basketball. I see the Knicks pulling that series out in seven. So we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah. Luckily the first two games have not dispelled at all that this one looks like it's going the distance, six or seven games. Cause I could do, you know, six or seven games of those two teams playing any day. Yeah. I went with my head over my heart on that one. I still find myself rooting for the Knicks cause of the Bulls ties. And just cause, I mean, these games at MSG are just crazy. Like, I would give anything to be a fly on the wall for one of those, for one of these games at the Garden. But I did go with my head over my heart on the pick there, but whatever happens, just hope it, just hope we get as many minutes of these two teams playing as we possibly can.
So how are we feeling about the Mike Conley job interview for all the Bulls fans watching game two? Mike is, you know, the whole savvy veteran thing. Mike is always like, coming out of Ohio State, he seemed like a savvy veteran. He's a better athlete than he's ever gotten credit for, obviously, with the jeans, with Pops being an Olympian. But the way he orchestrated that game, and listen, Ja Morant is a handful. You know, 47 speaks for itself. The dunk, the couple of dunks speak for themselves. But the way Mike Conley handled that game, especially in the fourth quarter, when they were running pick and roll, getting Rudy Gobert the ball, finding Royce O'Neal in the corner for a huge three. They came out, 10-0 to start that fourth quarter when they were still connected. Mike Conley doing his thing on the stage where, you know, Lonzo Ball and some other Bulls point guard potential free agent pickups or acquisitions aren't performing on this stage. What do you guys think of the dude that is making Utah go while they're trying to find their footing with Donovan Mitchell being hurt?
Great player, has been a great player for a long time. You know, I remember when the reaction to him at one point being the highest paid player in the league was critical, and I never thought that. I mean, he's always, you know, been a guy who makes teams better. He just drives the engine, solid at both ends, solid really at every facet of the game. As I've said before on this pod, I don't see him leaving Utah. The word around the league is that he's very happy there, and obviously that's a championship contending team that whose window looks like it's going to stay open. And if he were to leave, it's going to cost a decent penny at a high age, push you even further into win now mode. So we'll see how that plays out as well. But he's such a good player, man. I remember Sam Smith at Bulls.com was writing a couple years ago the Bulls should get him then, you know, the Satoransky year. I was advocating for Derrick Rose at the time. He was advocating for Mike Conley. You know, and Sato has obviously done some nice things since here, but those are the two guys that are playing right now, and Sato is not. So, you know, it's Conley's a very, very good player, but he's gonna cost a little something this summer wherever he lands.
Yeah, I'm glad you dumped the cold water on it, Casey, so I didn't have to. But the machinations to get there would just be so difficult. Although it's just hard. God, it's just so hard to not watch a guy like that and think about how perfect of a fit he would be at that point guard spot. But yeah, just really, really tough to see how the Bulls would make that work financially. The pitch to Mike Conley. I mean, there's going to be a couple teams with cap space out there. I mean, look at the Knicks right now. I mean, the Knicks are kind of having the season that I think a lot of Bulls fans wish the Bulls had had in terms of like centering themselves as this team on the rise that is able to like, I think the Bulls have a lot of positivity to be able to pitch to prospective free agents and things like that. But to really have the results of, like, we were a top four seed in the East, we had home court in the first round, they might take a first round series. Like, look at all these tangible pieces of the foundation that we've built. So it all kind of ties together in that. Conley, you know, as much as he's a dream guy, I have never seen that one as quite feasible, especially the more you get into the weeds, and we'll get into this the more the offseason goes on, but the more that it really is complicated for the Bulls to get as much cap space as they might need for that. It might make more sense to work the margins to a degree a little bit more, but yeah, it's hard to not watch. I mean, even Rose, Casey, you mentioned there was talk about him coming back a couple off seasons ago. Even he's a free agent this off season, and it's like when the sentimental aspect and the basketball aspect combine, I'm sure people will be talking about that too. But just hard not to think about all the places the Bulls could be better as they're watching the teams that are where they want to be.
Career earnings for Mike Conley Jr. Guess. I always like looking up that stat just on the court, not indoors.
Oh, man. Just
basketball salary. 244. Did you say?
Yeah.
A little high. 207.
I was going to say 215. I was going to be close. Damn.
$1.
207. Shout out to Mike Conley for making over $200 million from playing NBA basketball.
A blessing.
And winning that horse competition, besting Zach LaVine. hopefully Zach made a little bit of a connection there.
What did he get for that?
right.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's it.
All right, so let's jump into it then. Casey, you penned. I don't even know if nobody pens anything anymore. You wrote a piece for NBCSportsChicago.com about the roster. We're talking a little bit about the roster and what it needs to look like in terms of playoff contention. You're seeing playoff rosters go at it right now. You're trying to figure out where the Bulls stack up, where they need to go in different directions, what they need to keep. You have predictions for the next season, staying and going. You run down the roster. So give us your locks, and then we can get into the maybes.
All right, good call. Yeah, so it was born out of the fact that, you know, obviously when Arturas first took over, some people kind of offered some chagrin at how little he flipped the roster. Obviously, his biggest decision to me was picking Denzel Valentine over Chris Dunn. But he only really swapped out, as we know, Dunn and Harrison for Williams and Temple. And, you know, he said it himself. I mean, you just look at the salary structure there. He said there's going to be a ton of roster spots available this summer. So this is going to be a huge opportunity for him and Mark Eversley and their staff to implement change, widespread change. And so I just kind of went down the roster one by one and made a prediction of staying or going. As per usual, via Twitter, I got yelled at a lot because people said I had too many staying. I have 9 stays, 6 gone. And that's why this will be fun to kind of kick this around. To me, this to answer your question, Jason, about the locks to me are Zach LaVine, Nikola Vucevic, Patrick Williams, Kobe White, Al-Farouq Aminu, and obviously he's not a lock in terms of basketball talent or fit, but he is going to be picking up his option, and I just don't see a trade market for him. I could be wrong, but to me he's a lock because of that. I don't see that. Yeah, I don't see that contract being able to be moved. And then the 6th lock would be Troy Brown Jr., rookie deal, defensive potential, athleticism. So the other 3 stays I had, and these are we can get into the squishy area where we can kick it around, or you can even debate some of those locks. I have all 3 of Thad Young, Tomas Satoransky, and I have Garrett Temple returning, but I have a kind of a qualifier on that. I think it's going to be Temple or Archie Diakono for a back end kind of palatable contract, back end dependable player. But the interesting ones are Young and Satoransky, and the big one to me is Satoransky, because if you're going to go out and get a point guard, which is where we were starting on this podcast, and which I've heard again for the 2nd straight offseason is a priority, and it wasn't addressed last season, you know, you've got Kobe White, you're going to have presumably whoever you bring in. Is Satoransky too much duplication there? The justification I had for bringing him back is that he's sunk costs because, you know, whether he's on your roster or not, he's going to cost you a certain amount of money. His contract's partially guaranteed, so even if you waive him, You know, some of his money goes on your books. So to me, he's, you know, if he's sunk cost, you know, why not bring him back for $10 million and have him be a combo, versatile reserve, play multiple positions, play starting role, reserve role, whatever. So that's why I have him back. And then Thad I have back just because, you know, he's the MVP of the team. No, I'm just kidding. But, you know, you obviously just had such a great year last year. And I have Theis leaving. The reason why I have Thad back, I think Theis's market is going to get too rich. You know, if you just look at the roster, Charlotte would be a perfect situation for him, and they've got cap space to throw at him. So there you go. That's my breakdown, and that's probably the longest I've ever talked consecutively on this podcast. So someone else go.
Well, Casey, the one qualifier, the additional qualifier I put on Aminu, which you have in your piece, is the possibility that if they chase this, you know, as much cap space as they can, scenario or route, there's also the possibility you could waive and stretch Aminu's contract. He's got $10.2 million on it, ready for next or scheduled for next season. And if I'm right, I think you could waive and stretch that over the next three seasons for 3.4 each. So you know, you could cut $6 or $7 million off the cap this year. You're obviously extending the Band-Aid ripping process on the last year of that contract over the next two off seasons, which, you know, it's a debate whether you would rather chase as much cap space as you can, try to make the big splash move this off season, or wait until next off season and do it. So, you know, there's a question there. Maybe that's a possibility in another way that he could find his way off the lock list to be back. But I agree with all your other ones. Obviously, Zach, Vooch, Kobe, Pat, and Troy Brown Jr. kind of speak for themselves, all fully guaranteed. Kobe and Troy Brown Jr. still on rookie contracts and can be contributors. You know, I like Billy Donovan, I wish we could have seen more Troy Brown Jr. after the deadline because he showed promise, but he missed the last 15 games with the sprained ankle. It's unfortunate. So I'll be interested to see, just because his skill set is so needed on this roster, like wing, playmaker, good perimeter defender. I'll be interested to see what he can bring next year. The Thad and Sato things are such a heartbreaker, because if, you know, you could try to get out from as much of those partial guarantees as you can, or trade them, or, you know, whatever you want to decide to do there, to try to free up avenues for other moves. But to me, it kind of seems like it's an all or nothing thing, where it's like, if you really want to go for as much cap space as you can, you cut all the weight that you can, not only from them, but also cap holds with guys like Temple and Theis and Lauri Markkanen, who I think you should probably want to hang on to his restricted rights, because you could use it in a sign and trade potentially, or match and kind of bring the asset back, or maybe bring back on the qualifying offer, whatever. So I agreed with your reasoning on Sato, where if you're not going to go full bore for as much cap space as you possibly can, you know, is it worth cutting ties and still having to pay him $5 million when it's not like he's it's not like he's a negative player in the right role. And you know, if they do address the point guard position and he's kind of an off the bench combo guard, as you mentioned, he did revive his spot up shooting a little bit this year. Obviously he's a pretty responsible playmaker for the most part. So I see the logic behind Sato being back. Theis, to me, it's always been a pick one between him and Thad. But, you know, maybe the front office is differently, because they seem to really like Theis. I mean, Arturis went on the record publicly as saying he was, like, looking forward to addressing his free agency, and they loved everything they saw from him this year. Obviously, how could you not, especially with kind of the toughness and physicality that he brings? So I certainly am not – you know, we've talked about how nice it would be to bring Theis back on this podcast, but just seeing – the struggles that they had, the Bulls had, especially offensively, kind of shifting to that new style of play, going super big. Obviously, it coincides with Zach LaVine being out, so that's a factor too. But I wonder if they'll want to, you know, balance the roster a little bit more. And if you want to do that, you know, you might have to pick between Thad and Theis. So I'll be interested there. I'll be interested also what his market looks like, because there are some center needy teams out there. I think you mentioned did you mention Charlotte in your piece, Casey?
Yeah.
So that, I mean, they're a team that I look at for, you know, a lot of the kind of center options of any stripe that are out there right now, because that is kind of, it seems like that's their missing piece from really, you know, getting to the next level of their rebuild project. So we'll see. The other thing, I'm also a proponent of trying Patrick Williams out more at the four. So if you're going to do that, you obviously don't want to bring Theis and Thad off the bench. I don't know if that's what the organization is going to want to do. But you know, we'll see. That it'll certainly instruct a lot based on how they handle all these decisions. I see, you know, adding obviously a point guard and then wing depth as being a little bit more important there. But all of that's to say, I agree with pretty much everything you said. Nine people coming back, people might be a little aggrieved by that given the results of the season, but that still does leave you with six open roster spots. There's also the potential sign and trade with Lowry. If you operate over the cap, you have your full mid-level exception. You know, there are still going to be avenues here, even if you do bring nine back. And I think if they operate in a way that they're not chasing the most cap space possible, you can kind of pick and choose, like, all right, here are the guys that we liked what they brought last year, and we can keep all of the core essentials here and then add to that. I think that could be a prudent way to go about it. So I didn't really have any quibbles with what you set out there.
Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I have no quibbles at all. I just like using the word quibbles every once in a while. Thank you so much, Rob, for allowing me to do so. No, it sounds to me like there will be slight changes. Obviously, if they go out and get a point guard, that's a big change. But this is going to be the player development year, right? This is going to be the, you know, how important now are the next renditions of Wendell Carter Jr. and Lowry Market. Now that gets passed on to Coby White and Pat Williams, like how much they develop. And you brought in the player development guy, you brought in the player development front office. So it, outside of a veteran point guard option, and who your starting power forward is, which is what Rob was jumping into. I got no issues with Pat Williams playing more of the four at a more responsible role. I also would wonder what would that do to his ball handling ability in this offense, because, you know, I think the only way that you're going to get Pat Williams to understand that he has to shoot the ball more is for him to have the ball in his hands, like off the break or off the glass, and not having to look for a point guard every single time because the energy that he needs to have, you know, being aggressive with the basketball. But yeah, I think this roster is going to look much the same. I don't think there's going to be any earth shattering moves outside of hopefully a point guard. And I don't know how earth shattering that will be, but sounds like it's going to be the same squad for the most part.
Yeah, I do think there will be avenues to change it up a little bit. I mean, I really think if they can find a sign and trade partner for Lowry, it could change the whole offseason. So if I was a Bulls fan, I would be really hopeful that they could do that. Just to, again, balance the roster a little bit more. And yeah, part of what you said, Jason, with the ball handling stuff, just think about all the skills that Pat flashed this year. And I just think they shine, you know, the way that the game is played these days at the four, like just him attacking closeouts, him handling the ball against kind of slower footed guys at the four. I just see that as being a little bit more advantageous to where he's at skill wise. I think as his body develops and as his just as his feel for the game advances and things like that, I think he'll be able to guard threes or fours. And he showed a little bit as kind of a help side shot blocker and things like that to help along with Vooch. So I don't know. I've seen that all year. I've wanted them to experiment with that. I think one of his best stretches of the season came when he started, when Lowry was out with that shoulder sprain. He started at the four alongside Wendell. So obviously, you know, it's a different team now, but I still think there are things there, the spot up shooting. There's just a lot there that I think, you know, advantages the Bulls if you can find that spot for him at the four. But it comes down to like, what can you do through a potential sign and trade? What can you do with that mid-level exception? If they're over the cap, if they're under the cap, it's a whole different game. And then just kind of fitting the pieces in around that. Like maybe it's easier to go after, you know, or maybe it's easier to just bring back Thad and Tice, kind of run that back. Maybe it's easier to find a four out on the open market for that exception. Maybe it's easier to find a two or a three and then you slide Pat down. So it's tough, but I still think with six open roster spots, the player development aspect of it too, like I hope at least that we'll see more kind of taking flyers on guys, younger guys, in that player development vein that you were talking about, Jason. It felt like the back end of the roster this season was kind of running out the clock on the Felicio contract. The two-way guys never really got much of a shot. AK comes over from a Nuggets front office that was really good at identifying kind of these, and I don't mean any disrespect by this terminology, it's just the only thing I can think of off the top of my head, but just kind of like scrap heap guys, like scouting the G League, finding these second round finds. Maybe Marko Simonovic comes over this year. Maybe that's a factor too. That's certainly out there. So I hope that not only can you add, you know, maybe one or two starting level guys with what they will have available to them, but also that those last three, four, five roster spots get, you know, used in a little bit more of a strategic, like intentional, okay, we're trying to find, you know, the diamond in the rough here. You know, as Denver used to, that's not solely crediting AK for that, but Denver, it's just where he came from. Denver, you know, still is doing that. And the Bulls didn't seem to a lot or as much last year. So I'll be interested to see if they do that. And I do think there are ways for them to improve the team a little bit, but I don't blame people, but it could be, you know, 6 to 8 or 6 to 9 people returning, which is, you know, it's just kind of a reality of what it is at this point. Hey guys, wanted to take a few seconds to tell you about Geology. Geology is all about personalized skincare for men. It's easy to use, simple, 4 products, and I promise no chemistry degree required. What you're going to do is go to geology.com, take a quick diagnostic test, tell Geology what kind of results you want to see, and they're going to set you up with a dermatologist-designed regimen for you in real time. It's simple, it's effective, the results speak for themselves. They've gotten over 3,000 5-star reviews, Best of Grooming Awards, featured in Esquire, Rolling Stone, Mashable, BuzzFeed. These guys are legit. They're here to help you have the best skincare regimen that you could possibly have, look and feel the best that you possibly can. So make sure you're going to geology.com for the best personalized skincare experience that you're pretty much going to find anywhere.
So you guys are saying that there's no outside help coming.
No, I don't think no. I don't think no outside help by any means. But.
No, I mean like significant, like the majority of the impact that we should see next season should come from players that they're developing into be. Like there isn't, you know, this.
Because if they did go out and get a veteran point guard, that changes everything for them in terms of all the shit that we saw at the end of the season last year. Like, you know, letting leads go away, like blowing leads, just poor turnover games where you're getting close to 20 turnovers, multiple games. Like these are the things that hopefully a veteran point guard will allow for and correct. And also, you know, we've seen some of the decision-making that some of the best players on this team have made. Like Zach LaVine is still trying to figure out playmaking and all those other things. You take a little bit of that load off his plate and not have to have him take over that fourth quarter point guard or ball handler situation, you know, when Kobe White was not the Kobe White we saw at the end of the season. I think you could make what would be considered a media move and it'd have a large impact on this team. You just got to make sure it's the right one. And you got to make sure that some of these guys that are important for this team, like you got to start pushing this roster down. After a while, you know, how much of that Thad are you going to get out of Thad? You know, there's guys who are way, way important on this team. And shout out to Thad Young. He's probably one of the best episodes of this Bulls Talk podcast last year or this year. But there are guys who – should have their proper importance instead of this heightened importance on this team and still not make the playoffs. You know, you don't want that this year. So they can make a medium move and have a large impact to make a long story short, I think. Right. I mean,
yeah. And regardless of whether or not which path they choose, Tony, in terms of the cap situation, whether they choose to work the margins to carve out significant space or stay as an over the cap team. I mean, the mid-level exception is pretty significant. So, you know, between one of those routes, they're going to have decent money to sign a player, and that's not even accounting for whether or not they can find a sign and trade situation for Lowry, which would be also over the cap situation. So we'll see.
To be fair, though, you do have to help. You do have to hope that a full offseason unlocks a little bit more of the Zach Vooch pairing, and that the development of Patrick Williams. You do have to hope that all that stuff comes to fruition. And yeah, I certainly don't mean to, Tony, paint it as if it's like a certainty that they're going to play this more kind of conservatively. Because also the thing about this front office, like everything past last offseason has been very bold, very, very aggressive in terms of like pursuing avenues to improve the team. So I don't mean to paint it as a certainty. It's just there kind of are two options on the table. And I've begun to think that the over the cap option, especially because of what it can open up for you next offseason, where I think they might be a little bit better positioned free agent wise anyway. I'm just starting to think that might be more prudent, but it's certainly always possible that they clear the decks and try to maximize this thing now, because they know that the pressure's on and they know that they've made this push in the chips move and they need results quickly. So it's certainly always possible. But it's going to be interesting to see which of those two directions they pick when they are put in a position to do so.
I do have a question that I want to throw out to you guys. It's something that I've been pondering. Something I've just been discussing with like a few people. Do you guys think they push in the chips too early?
Starting
the timeline of like, all right, this is what it is now. This is going to be our foundation, and we're just going to have to expand past this.
Well, here's my answer to that is like, I certainly get it. And I'm not saying I'm going to be right here, but I, you know, what we heard for so many years was how are the Bulls going to get an all-star? Okay. How are they going to get a second all-star? Well, they finally did it. And now it's like, okay, well, we don't know. We don't like that. You know, now they're like, now the reaction is we're quibbling on that approach, you know, because maybe it wasn't the right all-stars. I don't know if it's going to work, but God bless them for trying, man. They went out and got a second all-star. Getting an all-star costs a lot. And, you know, they obviously paid a decent amount in terms of draft capital. The players, you know, I get it, man. Gafford's dunking on beds now. Wendell had a couple nice games for the Magic. It wasn't happening here. We saw it enough, okay? So the players I'm fine with. And no disrespect to any of those players. I hope they go to their new situations and succeed. But those players were not doing that here. So I'm fine with the players. And then, so now it's down to the draft capital. Hey man, you got to pay two first round picks to get an all-star. I don't care how old he is. I don't care if he's, you know, Nikola Vucevic level all-star, not a Kevin Durant type all-star. He's an all-star center. Look at his numbers, man. The dude is a baller. So now you have two very good players, and you hope that your first round pick becomes a very good player. And Kobe is still a very important piece, and you build out from here. So I personally have zero problem with that trade. God bless them for taking the big swing. If it fails, it fails, and that's going to be on them. But I personally have no problem with what they did at all.
Yeah, I'm on record as liking the process behind it in the moment, so I can't renege on that now, especially because it's not at the end of the timeline of the trade.
Yeah, there is an aspect of it. Yeah, you can.
Well, no, but I don't mean that as in like I want to, but I can't. But I'm just saying, like, you know, if I like the process behind it in the moment, you know, no matter how woeful the next however many months or weeks after were, you know what I mean? You can't just flip flop. Like, that's not how decision making works, like in the league. I just think it's there's a next year aspect to this thing that I want to see play out before I make a final determination on it. What I will say though, with the results for this season. Like, there is a reality of making this trade in this moment. And this is something Darnell Mayberry over The Athletic has been saying and writing for a while. But there is an aspect to making a move like that in a pandemic season where the schedule is condensed, where you never know what can happen. Teams can get hot. Your best players actually can get COVID at a random time. So there is a level of that where, looking back, I totally get it. If you're like, oh man, like, was this season precisely the time to do it? Or when you frame a year as an evaluation year, and things are going pretty well into the All-Star break. Now, obviously, between the All-Star break and the trade deadline, things kind of spiraled a little bit. Maybe that contributes. But I certainly get why people would question the process for that reason. And, man, it's really going to hurt if they don't have that top four pick or if they don't have their first-round pick, regardless, top four or not, like they could have just had it. And, you know, whether it be anywhere from 5 to 10 if they hadn't made the deal. So, again, I'm not making final determinations on it. I have an eyebrow raised, certainly. Like, I'm skeptical. And I just really, really want to see what a full offseason unlocks. I want to see what moves they make. And then I want to see how they start the year off next year, because it's really going to say a lot if they come out and things don't look solved. And then, man, the heat really comes on. But for now, I mean, I don't think it's carrying water or it's being too optimistic to say that we're still in wait and see mode on this thing. I think, you know, there's still a lot to be decided, not only by the offseason moves, but the way they prepare and the way they come out next season. But I did think it was a slam dunk in the moment, and I'm a little bit more skeptical now after seeing the initial returns, and we'll see where it goes from here.
Yeah, I got no problem if you want to bitch about it. I got no problem if you're happy with the move. At this point, the results will bear whatever you need to see. Bulls fans – have been the ones who have been watching every Bulls game and, you know, tried and true. They know the anguish and pain that they've gone through since Derrick Rose's knee injury. And if this is just another card on that train of pain, then add it to it. But right now, you did for years, like KC mentioned, you were upset about this team not taking swings. These dudes have come in here and been trigger pullers from the moment go. When he thought it was going to be a first-year head coach, all of a sudden Billy Donovan becomes available. He's the head coach. When we thought, okay, it's a three-player draft, then what are they going to do here? They take probably one of the bigger swings in the draft in terms of where that thing lined up and where people thought Patrick Williams would be. He wasn't. I saw 7, 8, some 11. I saw Detroit thinking that they were going to get him. He was the next pick after a three-man draft, apparently, and we're seeing now it's not a three-man draft. So these guys take big swings, and if Nikola Vucevic is the big swing that doesn't pan out, you'll have all the time in the world to say, I told you so. Either way, you ain't got Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, or James Harden right now. And I don't know how to say it without, like, crushing anybody's dreams. Right now, the Bulls need to get in the damn playoffs. And right now, the Bulls need to find their way back to some kind of contention and relevancy that these other NBA – because, listen, for the people who watch NBC Sports Chicago – every single pre and post game and every single game, appreciate you. But really what this is for 20 teams in this league damn near is an advertisement for why you as a disgruntled player should come here. It's as simple as that. You know what I mean? That, look, hey, it's two all-stars over here. It's Billy Donovan over here. We ain't got the, you know, the other guy or the guy before that. Like, they're trying to set up shop so that they can be competitive. And if somebody wants to drop in a third market in the country, knock yourself out. I understand the play. I do understand the play, Tony. And I understand the angst. It's not a good first commercial not making the playoffs. It's not. It's not. So if you want to be upset at it, knock yourself out. Like, if it, you know, if you're seeing things early in the relationship and you're like, I'm gonna keep an eye on this because this might be worrisome. I got no problem with that as a Bulls fan, a Bulls observer. Knock yourself out. You've been conditioned to not trust. Okay? You've been conditioned to be skeptical. But also, don't bitch when you feel like something is coming along. There's a lot of people who are jumping in the crowd like, oh, I got guys sending me Obi Toppin highlights and shit. Come knock it off. Knock it off. All right?
That's crazy.
And he knows who he is, and it's my man, and he's listening right now. Yes, you, jerk. You're an ass. Well, don't send me no damn Obi Toppin highlights at quarter to midnight. I'm in the house sleep. All right, I don't need to see this young man who underwhelmed for the majority of the year flying there in the playoffs as if some glory is coming along with it. Don't worry. If the Bulls belong in the playoffs, they will be there next year, and we can start this thing. But I got no problem if you're upset or if you're trying to figure out why you're nervous or anxious. You're nervous and you're anxious because you've been in a bad relationship for a while. It's as simple as that. And as we wrap this up and I head to my therapy session, you tweeted something out, KC. 10 years and in this range, because people are going to hear it on Friday. So 10 years in this similar moment, 10 years ago, the Heat and the Bulls were facing off. And boy, I took all the flack in the world because the Bulls in that Eastern Conference Finals won that first game and parades were being planned and things were happening around this city. And I was like, hey, guys, let's just wait. Number 6 for them is kind of good. I know he went to Miami and everybody's supposed to hate him now, but, and then 4 games happened. And as you tweeted, it was supposed to be the start of an era and it ended up being pretty much like the beginning of the end, right? Because then you have the injury in the next year. Looking back on that, what were some of your memories from that series? Because man, that was, I've covered prize fights, right? God, I sound old. I've covered boxing matches. I've covered heavyweight title fights in Vegas, in Madison Square Garden. That right there, I've covered Final Fours, you know, when Melo won his, when Ben Gordon and them boys won theirs. That right there was as fun a stage as I've ever witnessed in my career, being around this. just watching those teams square off and the run and leading up to it and the MVP and LeBron coming in here, and you knew he was pissed off about that MVP situation. You know, Dwayne Wade playing back in Chicago, like all that stuff that was in that mix, right? So that's why now I'm like, hey, if you want to get mad at a trade, knock yourself out. I'm not going to be there with you because I've seen shit like that 10 years ago around this time, Casey.
Yeah, so Wednesday was the 10-year anniversary of the Game 5 loss, which obviously ended the series. And pretty remarkable that 10 years later to the day, Derek leads the Knicks to that comeback victory. I mean, it's just remarkable, and, you know, tying it back to what we were saying earlier. But, you know, my memory of the series is one that probably a lot of people have is, you know, the Bulls obviously had their way in Game 1, but then LeBron started switching on to Derek at important moments. And
It was curtains. Hey, the next day I went on the air and was like, hey, guys, their Derrick Rose is 6'8" and 270 pounds. and oh, traitor, I got people hitting me up. You don't know what this team is. They're tough. They're not prima donnas. I'm like, that's cool. But in the fourth quarters, their Derrick Rose is 6'9", 6'8". Man, damn, Casey, that was a great time, dude.
Yeah, but it's funny because I was actually going into the weeds on Game 5 just because it was the 10-year anniversary. So I was actually looking at the running and the box score and everything. And, you know, the Bulls, as we all remember, they led like 40 minutes of Game 5. They led almost the entire game. And then at the end, LeBron's like, all right, you know what? I'm going to hit a three, get a steal from Derek, and then hit a two, and this game will be over, which is basically what happened in the final minute. Is LeBron, it just was like the LeBron James minute, and the game was over, and the series was over. And, yeah, I mean, I'll never forget just the feeling of how this was going to be something that's going to be lasting for a while. And obviously – you know, a year later against Philly, it kind of all went downhill from there. So sad, so sad. But so good to see Derek doing what he's doing now, as we all know.
Yes, sir. It is. It's good to see him. Rob, your thoughts as we wrap this up. You were a young lad watching those playoff series. What do you remember from the Death Star that is known as the Miami Heat in that playoff run and it ending in the Eastern Conference Finals for the Bulls?
I remember not thinking the Bulls had much of a chance from afar. And I remember thinking sometimes the prima donnas win. So that's, I don't have many vivid memories watching that one or having significant emotional investment other than, as I'm sure a lot of people my age when they were, you know, young teenagers, just rooting very hard against LeBron James. Obviously I've come to have a little bit of a, objective kind of clear head as I've gotten into the industry and like just appreciating the greatness of it. But I remember as a kid, you know, rooting for those Bulls teams and in turn against LeBron. And then obviously the 2011 finals are what they are, but yeah. And definitely Casey, I mean, you summed it up well in that piece. Like it really should have been the beginning of something. And instead it just ends up marking, you know, the high watermark of that Bulls era. And looking back on it, just kind of a time capsule of what could have been. Super unfortunate. And what I didn't remember was that the Bulls led for that long in that game, or that the final score of that game was 83-80. So talk about a time capsule. But yeah, that was an interesting piece to read yesterday. I'd recommend if anybody's interested in flogging themselves today, going to NBC Sports Chicago and checking that out. Cause it was an interesting look back and interesting to reflect on, but at the end of the day, just a reminder of what could have been, I suppose.
Rob, you were in the fetal position anyway after the Heat beat up on your Celtics in the first.
Yeah, game. I thought it was over. And then what happened next year? Well, it was over. So that's what LeBron James did to the Eastern Conference for the better part of a decade. So
yeah, he did. What was it? 8 straight finals? What was it? Yeah. 9? Damn, pretty good that dude. All right, we'll wrap it there. For Rob Schaefer and Casey Johnson, Tony Gill, always good to hear and see Tony, even though you guys can't see him on this podcast. I'm Jason Goff. We thank you for listening to the Bulls Talk podcast brought to you by Coors Light. As always, take care of each other, be safe, and we'll talk to you next time. We hope you enjoy the Bulls Talk podcast presented by Coors Light. Find us on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and your smart speakers. Subscribe if you like the show. Feel free to rate and review us because you know you love us. New episodes ready every Tuesday and Friday morning. But until then, take care of each other. Be safe.